Dr. Walter Freeman removed his jacket and placed it on the edge of the carnival stage. Freeman carefully unzipped his medical bag. He took out a simple ice pick and a battered carpenter's hammer. Nearby, the monkey squealed and jumped up and down. "Ladies and gentlemen, I perform what is known as the lobotomy. In fact, I have performed over 3,000 of them. I have pioneered a method known as the transorbital lobotomy. I can assure you, ladies and gentlemen, that the process is nearly entirely pain-free, and other than a couple of black eyes, which heal in a matter of days, there are no further complications."
Yeah, I heard about you," shouted a man with a wooden cross hanging over his oversized overalls. "You turn 'em into vegetables is what you do. You take a perfectly good brain and you mutilate it. Well, you ain't gonna mutilate my brain, that's for damn sure."
"Yes, sir, I certainly hope that's the case. You seem to be in perfectly good mental health, so I doubt I would ever have to—"
"What's the monkey for?"
somebody in the crowd shouted. At this, Freeman smiled broadly. He turned toward his lobotomized assistant, Edgar, and said, "Open the cage, my dear sir." Edgar stared at Freeman for a few moments, with those dead eyes, and then bent down and unsnapped the latch. He reached into the cage and grabbed the monkey, who had been jumping up and down and screeching. Edgar held the creature close to his chest and seemed oblivious to the fact that it was twitching terribly, trying to bite his arm. As Edgar moved toward the doctor with the monkey, Freeman raised the ice pick and hammer in one hand and shouted into the megaphone,
"Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the transorbital lobotomy."
Later, after he'd lobotomized the monkey, after the crowd had watched in amazement at the transformation,
"Look at this little fellow, no longer agitated, no longer baring his teeth. Fixed, I tell you, fixed."
Freeman and Edgar packed up their stuff, monkey and all, and left the carnival grounds. His old black Cadillac was parked beneath a blackjack oak.
"Have I told you about my mother, Edgar? A sad, sad story."
"You've told me," Edgar said. "I remember."
Freeman stroked his gray goatee and pursed his lips.
Yes, I suppose I must have. I've told you everything, isn't that true?"
Again, a slow nod.
"It doesn't matter. You're a good listener, Edgar. And stories change every time we tell them, because our memories change every time we remember. So, would you humor me? Would you listen again?"
"Okay, I'll listen."
"Yes, thank you. Well then, my mother, a sad story indeed. It started with the nightmares, isn't that right? Terrible nightmares that would cause her to moan and scream and thrash all about, and my father would shake her awake and then hold her and stroke her hair and comfort her while I watched through the keyhole, terrified. And then, after he'd gotten her to calm down, after her breathing and heartbeat had returned to normal, she'd tell him about the dream. And it was always the same one. The terrible man in the attic, who dressed in a white suit and a white hat, who held a lantern in one hand and miner's pickaxe in the other, who crept down the stairs, slowly, slowly, and grabbed me and used the axe to gouge my eyes out, used the axe to rupture my torso, use the axe to tear my heart out."
"As I said, Edgar, terrible, terrible dreams."